Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, May 18th. Today, Sun reporters John Ingold and Michael Booth talk about the latest in Colorado climate and health news, including a new program to study carbon sequestration in a community known for its industrial heritage. Before we start, a quick message. Citywide Banks, a division of HTLF Bank, is a Colorado-focused community bank celebrating 60 years of helping companies grow and families thrive. They keep decision-making to a local level, and bankers are focused on providing impactful financial solutions for your business. Visit citywidebanks.com to learn more. Citywide Banks is a member FDIC and an equal housing lender. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1868, soldiers mustered one last time on the parade ground at Fort Morgan. After lowering the American flag, they marched away with 100 wagons filled with supplies and government property, bound for the Union Pacific Railroad line in Wyoming Territory. Fort Morgan operated for less than 3 years. Its first soldiers arrived in the summer of 1865 and consisted primarily of galvanized Yankees, captured Confederates who preferred service in the West to a prison camp. Although violence erupted across the plains after the Sand Creek Massacre the previous fall, the new post remained quiet. Aside from a few skirmishes, its troops guarded overland emigrants, mail service, and the telegraph line in the South Platte River Valley. Even in a time of conflict, an average of 140 wagons per day passed Fort Morgan, but by 1868, traffic along the South Platte slowed to a trickle. Most Colorado-bound travelers elected to take the railroad to Cheyenne and proceed southward instead. After Fort Morgan's abandonment, cattle and sheep ranchers moved into the river valley. Farmers took over by the early 1880s, building a town site on the bluffs where the fort once stood. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun's 2023 Reader Survey is open. Fill out the survey and let us know your thoughts. Whether you're a Colorado Sun member, newsletter subscriber, or reader, we want to hear from you. Visit cosun.com/2023readersurvey today. Next, our feature story.
Well, hi, everyone. Happy Thursday, and welcome to another edition of the Daily Sun Up podcast. As you know, Thursdays are usually the day that my colleague Mike Booth and I get together and talk about climate and health news. My name is John Ingold, and I'm the healthcare reporter for The Sun. So, hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, John. Doing well. Go Nuggets.
So, I think we're going to start off today by talking about one of your stories, which has to do with carbon sequestration, and maybe we can just start with the basics and remind people what that is.
Sure. So carbon sequestration is the idea of if you can't get rid of carbon completely by eliminating fossil fuel burning, you stuff it underground. And there are different arguments about how much that's going to be necessary. And there's some discussion about whether that's a moral hazard. We've talked about in the pages of The Sun before, whether it's a moral hazard to let fossil fuel companies sort of get away with it by continuing to promote fossil fuels and produce fossil fuels by saying, okay, we'll solve the problem by stuffing it underground. But there's a counter argument that in order for Colorado and the whole world to meet its climate goals and get rid of enough greenhouse gases to actually start slowing climate change down, we are going to need to sequester carbon. There's so-called stubborn carbon from cement kilns, from the remaining coal-fired power plants, from coal-fired power plants that may be switched to natural gas as a backup power source for all the renewables that Colorado is building. So the big news this week that we're reporting on that people are pretty excited about, even from an economic development perspective, is that the School of Mines is getting $32 million in a Department of Energy federal grant to continue studying and creating a hub for carbon sequestration based in Pueblo. One of the reasons they're choosing the Pueblo area, Pueblo is home to the largest greenhouse gas emitter in Colorado, which is the Comanche Power Plant, which still has some of the largest coal-fired power units in Colorado and is emitting millions of tons of carbon a year. It also is home to one of the three remaining large cement kilns in Colorado. And that, as we mentioned, is stubborn. It's hard to find the energy you need to create cement without burning fossil fuels. And so they need to, if we're going to continue that kind of economic industrial activity in Colorado, we need to consider whether there's a place to put that underground. So School of Mines and the Pueblo area will now have this $32 million to continue studying. Are there caverns in that area that can sequester carbon safely and permanently? How long a pipeline do you need to get the carbon gas from the sources of emissions at the power plants or at the cement kilns or at the Pueblo steel plant that Evraz runs into the underground caverns? Another issue that they will have to follow and look at very carefully now with both federal and state rules is that everything has to be done through an environmental justice lens now. So if you're going to be adding a big new industrial facility and stuffing what can be a hazardous substance underground permanently, make sure you're not doing it in areas that are already overly affected by industrial emissions and industrial pollution. So you're not making environmental justice worse in that area. Pueblo has obviously been impacted over the decades by the power plant, by steel production, by the cement kiln, by other industrial production that's down there. Pueblo has some lower income areas and high minority areas that are part of these areas that are protected by federal rules and state rules. And so they'll have to make sure that any carbon activity that's done down there is not making all of that worse. So really interesting announcement. Big chunk of money, obviously, for School of Mines to continue this interesting research.
So I want to wind back a little bit and ask about the safely and permanently element of all of this. Are there geologic risks to pumping carbon underground?
They're still studying that as well, and that's part of it. Do you create the potential for earthquakes? Do you create the potential for leaks? And will all the carbon end up back out in the atmosphere anyway? What is the best kind of formation? Is it a salt dome formation? Is it other kinds of geological formations that do exist in Colorado, but we don't know everything we need to know about yet? What are the economics of how long you have to build a pipeline to get there? And what other infrastructure do you need around those facilities? So there are some small experiments going on right now in Colorado in terms of ethanol plants that are sequestering carbon, some other ways of taking carbon out of the air and somehow getting rid of it or filtering it, getting it underground. But there's a lot that we don't know yet. And so a place like School of Mines, which has already been helping the state on some of these studies, is exactly the kind of place we need to continue those studies. And I'm sure they will be teaming up with the National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, which are the experts on many of these things. And they collaborate very well with the School of Mines and other state facilities. So we'll continue to follow that. And it's really interesting development. Switching back to your side of it and health and healthcare and health economics, there was some interesting news this week with the alleged community benefit of changing the name of a Broncos facility from one major healthcare system to another. And then also some questions about whether that healthcare system is even going to be around much longer, and certainly in terms of the terms of this agreement. So tell us more about that, John.
Yeah, definitely. So this is kind of a quirky story, but it wouldn't on its face be all that unusual. Basically, the upshot here is that Centura Health, which is a major health system, hospital system here in Colorado, it runs St. Anthony Hospital out in Lakewood. It runs St. Anthony Summit up in Frisco. Centura has bought the naming rights to the Denver Broncos training facility and headquarters. So it'll now bear the Centura name. And the reason this isn't super surprising is that this is actually a pretty big thing that hospitals actually fight over quite a bit. It's kind of a big prize that hospital systems go after. The facility was previously bore the name of UC Health, another big hospital system here in Colorado. So, okay, so you see Centura has bought the naming rights, not a big deal, except if you will recall, we've talked about this before on the podcast, Centura is actually breaking apart. Centura is this sort of joint venture between two large nationwide health systems. One is the Catholic-affiliated Common Spirit Health, and the other is the Seventh-day Adventist-affiliated Advent Health. They had previously sort of come together and brought their hospitals together and formed under the banner of Centura Health here in Colorado and out in western Kansas. And they announced earlier this year that they were going to go their separate ways and manage their hospitals separately. But they didn't announce what they were going to do with the Centura name. And so now you have this naming rights deal going on to the Broncos facility. And it seems to suggest the Centura name is going to continue on, but there really haven't been any details about how that's going to work.
And we don't know if that name will be promoting the Catholic side of the system or the Adventist side of the system or some other umbrella entity, but they must know this as they negotiate for this very valuable name connection. So I guess we'll need to keep following and see who's going to end up with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did reach out to some spokespeople for Centura and did not hear back. So I don't know if they'll be getting back to me. And if they do, of course, we'll update here again. It's not super surprising that Centura would want to partner with the Broncos. Obviously, the Broncos are a big draw for a health system. You want to get your name attached with the most popular sports team in the region. Russell Wilson, the Broncos quarterback, has previously had an arrangement with Centura. And Centura also, as part of this deal, agreed to donate $100,000 to a foundation that the Broncos run. And they say together they're going to jointly try to deal with some population health issues in Broncos country. I don't know how far they consider that extending. But the first step they want to deal with and address food insecurity among youth especially. So yeah, a lot more to pay attention to here, but it does seem like the Centura brand is going to stick around even if the Centura joint venture melts down.
Well, the Broncos do have a lot of regional fans in more than one state in our area, of course. And we could probably make a fairly safe bet that if there's TV ads involved, at some point Peyton Manning will show up in one of them, as he has in the CL to the past.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll have to watch. Well,
thanks for reporting on that. And thanks, everybody, for joining us again on this week's version of the Temperature Podcast. We do this every Thursday. And please subscribe to the Temperature newsletter if you can. And join us at coloradosun.com. And also join us for an event tonight at 6 o'clock, which you can register for free at coloradosun.com, on air pollution in Colorado. We'll have some top experts debating and answering reader questions on that. So thanks again for being along for that ride. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. Have a good week.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The Colorado School of Mines has $32 million to study and develop a carbon sequestration hub in southern Colorado. Announced Wednesday, the award comes from the Federal Department of Energy and could be a key to meeting greenhouse gas reduction goals in the coming years. The hub will be located where massive carbon emissions from a Pueblo-area power plant and cement kiln, among other major carbon producers, may need to be stuffed underground to meet state and U.S. climate change targets. The grant gives School of Mines and its partners financing to define and drill test sites. A program in one Colorado mountain community is providing fresh, local food to teachers for free. The monthly offerings vary by what's available, but generally they include seasonal produce, eggs, a protein, and breads from local and regional producers. The food cartons are a collaboration between the Gunnison-Hinsdale Early Childhood Council and Mountain Roots Food Project, a local food systems nonprofit. Organizers say it is a way to help give families healthy food options and also offset the low wages across the profession. Yemi Mobolade, a Nigerian immigrant and businessman with no political experience, will be the first elected black mayor of Colorado Springs. He received roughly 57% of the vote to beat Wayne Williams in the runoff contest. Mobolade will succeed John Southers, a former federal prosecutor and Colorado Attorney General who was term limited. The decisive victory Tuesday represents a political earthquake in Colorado Springs, long known as a conservative stronghold. Williams is a Republican and former Colorado Secretary of State, while Mobolade is unaffiliated. The Denver mayoral runoff is June 6th, and there is a voter guide about that race at coloradosun.com. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com, and don't forget to tune in again next time. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month for a basic membership, and if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our exclusive politics and outdoors newsletters. Thanks for starting your morning with us, and don't forget to tune in again tomorrow.